PM. Let's everybody stand and we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. All right. This is an area we'll probably be able to use Josh's unanimous consent on, but since we're going to have the teaching after, I will ask if everybody has read the agenda and if there are any changes that they want to make. There's one that I want to make. I want to be able to take off the zoning. Number 11B and number 12B. And we will address that after the Planning Commission has a chance to put the zoning chapter together. They had some other changes that they needed to make. So, is everyone good with that?
I'll make a motion that we approve the agenda with striking 11B and 12B.
Gladys will second that.
Okay. Anything else on here that you guys need changing? If not, we will accept the agenda as written with the one change with getting rid of 11B and 12B until probably a special meeting. All in favor?
Rush, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye. Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. Okay, we are scraped in that. All right. Josh has made a request to start using unanimous consent on real short items like the agenda, the checks. I don't know what else we could use it on. I guess we'll find out.
Time sheets.
Oh, the time sheets, correct. I apologize. Yep, the time sheets. Okay, so Josh has us a little training on unanimous consent that Jessica will show.
Change screen.
No, there won't be volume. So you should do it.
And to start it from the beginning or?
Yeah, I think so. We're not going to watch all 11 minutes of it. That's for sure. I don't know. I guess we just sort of talk through it. So the basic idea is that unanimous consent can be used by the chair when there's non-controversial items before the group. And the way it generally works is the chair will present the idea as instead of us making a motion, seconding, and then each voting on it. The chair can say something like, if there are no objections or without objections, we will accept the agenda as presented or accept the minutes as amended online. And then that serves as the motion itself. So it's as if we made a motion, seconded it, and all on it. If we don't
So that is how
is that it can speed up our meetings. It's entirely at Judy's discretion, right? It's at the mayor's discretion when she uses it. You can use it at any point in the motion making process. So it can be used to skip making motions entirely, in which case basically whatever Judy says after without objection or if there are no objections, that would functionally become the motion. So I think we're going to want to check in. Like, you just have to be careful on your wording, I guess. And we'll want to check in with Lacey on the minutes to make sure that it's not too confusing on how things are worded, the motion itself. But you can also, if you don't want to be responsible for that language, then you can have one of us make the motion and then just immediately follow that even without a second and say, well, if there are no objections, we will accept this motion as presented without wording. And then no vote. We just move right along to the next item. So it'll be a learning curve and clunky, but you know, coming in and out of public hearings, for example, you know, all the obvious procedural stuff it's good for. And then I don't know. It's up to you.
Well, let's start out with the basics, the small stuff.
Yeah.
Get used to what we're doing and work our way. And I'd kind of like to read or watch that and read up on it a little bit more so I understand it a little bit more, especially with the motions, you know.
I guess the key thing for us to understand is when she says, if there are no objections, then it's our duty to say, I object. And at that point, it gets kicked to the normal process where a motion is made and seconded and discussion and the formal vote. So at any point that we don't like something, we just say, I object, and then it just defaults to our normal process.
Okay.
One quick comment, Josh. I think it's an excellent idea. I think anything that speeds up our meetings will be much appreciated by the members and the public. The one constraint is that under state law, we do have to have a roll call vote on certain actions, which would the main one would be adopting an ordinance, approving a budget, things like that. Final actions do have to, and that's the state. That's not Robert's rules. That's state law. But that would, but yeah, I would agree for the routine procedural things, the routine administrative approvals. That's a great procedure.
Okay, can you send me that reference to state law?
Will do.
Because I know in the minutes it just says it has to be clear how everyone voted, but it doesn't specify how you have to vote.
Yeah, this has come up before because the roll call is time-consuming, but there are some cases where we have to do it.
It's really good.
Yep. I'll send you the reference, Josh. And
send it.
Or maybe, I'll send it to Jessica and she can distribute
to everyone. Yeah, she can distribute to everyone. Okay. All right. Moving on. Since everybody's looked at the agenda, is there any conflict of interest disclosure on the table? Anyone need to? All right. We'll move on to the minutes.
So last month you guys did not approve the September 5th because there were some changes that you wanted made to it. We had some problems with the access to it. And so Lacey thought she'd made the changes or went in to make the changes and wasn't able to. And we didn't realize that until just yesterday. And so the changes still, as far as I know, Lacey, right, they have not actually been made into the live document.
No, because I can't edit anything in the document.
Yeah, you should now. But
okay.
When we last talked, that was our problem. And so it is just the October 1st joint special meeting that is ready and then the October 3rd. But the agenda actually just says 3rd.
Okay. So since an AI, you used AI on both of those, right, you guys, on the two?
Yeah, it was only the October 3rd regular meeting.
Okay, and then this one is the one we're going to do it for two meetings, correct?
Yeah.
To see how it worked out.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll keep doing it until we feel like it's functional or worth abandoning.
Okay. Well, I read through it and I didn't see anything extra that wasn't changed. So anybody else? And that is on the October 1st joint meeting. I wasn't there, so that's not the one I was talking about, but you can go ahead and we'll address that one right now. And then we'll address the September 5th next month, correct, Jess?
Yes.
Okay.
What I did just notice, and I think this is going to have to be, I need this to be an emotion for the agenda. I did not realize until right this minute that on the approved minutes, it says October 01 joint special meeting, and then third, the word October got taken out, and I did not catch that.
Okay.
So for this to be the publicized, I need that to be a motion to change that the word October gets put into the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, well, so I'll move to add.
I will move to add October before the three on item five.
Gladys will second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. All right. So the AI meeting for October 1st.
Third. That was the
The
October
third, I'm
1st.
sorry, the third, yeah. That was kind of interesting. I really didn't mind it. I like the idea of putting the timestamps in there. And the fact that if anybody really wants to get into detail, that they can go back and listen to it for themselves. It shortened it up. I myself didn't have a problem with it. So I don't know how anybody else feels.
I don't remember which one talked about Gladys's travel plans, but it should be Gladys on the travel council when we report it.
I saw that too, and it had a question mark, didn't it?
I don't remember. I
That
just
was
saw
a, I thought for, yeah, I think it had a question mark. So that was Gladys on the travel council.
Yeah.
Okay, you got that, Lacey? Do you know what she's talking about?
Yeah, I can correct it.
Okay, I don't have a copy in front of me, or I'd. And then, John, you made up the ones that you made the notes on. I hate not having them in front of me. I like looking at those so I know what I'm doing. Josh has his computer. Maybe I should have brought my computer. But was it, which one was it that you made the adjustments on?
Like, I am not sure.
Do you have it in front of you, Lacey?
No, I can pull it up. It was definitely the one that AI transcribed if it's the October 1st.
Okay. But you put, but the changes were in there. So on that particular.
I did not make any changes on that document. I didn't touch this document at all, honestly.
I'm going to suggest that we table all those minutes to next month when we've got
That'll
clean
be fine.
copies.
Yeah, that'll be fine. Let's do that. Yep, I need a second.
Gladys will second.
All in favor of tabling the minutes till next month, say aye.
Josh, this is a good use of unanimous consent, though.
Oh.
Without objection.
Okay, so if there are no objections, we will table the minutes until next month. Oh, we don't even have to say that. Okay. So moved.
Yep.
Okay. Boy, we're gonna have to get rid or used to that one. All right, department reports. Josh, I'll start at the bottom.
Fire department and EMT. I don't think we had any calls this last month. That was nice. Working on NFPA 1142 implementation and ideas around that. Landfill. Corey's going to burn the dump on Monday. Sam dug a new construction pit this last month. He estimates that we only have 3 years of capacity left in the landfill at our current fill rates,
And
which is terrifying.
who said that?
Sam.
He did, huh?
So that's terrifying. Yeah.
Well,
Anyway, that's a whole other conversation we'll dig into more later.
okay.
County's hoping to get over here in the next month and get all our mattresses out at least. And they're still pursuing removal of metal from multiple landfills in the county, and we're part of that. So I'm hoping they can pull through on that. I also confirmed with Dave Dodds that the current dumpster policy that we have that states that construction materials less than 3 feet long and bagged is adequate and acceptable. And we are not the problem child, basically. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, it is.
Wildfire Council held their yearly meeting. I think the summary from Judith is in the meeting materials, or will be after the meeting, of their report. They're going to do a summary report of the survey responses early next year. They're still interested in pursuing emergency communication systems, which we're exploring. They're interested in engaging public lands agencies about management practices, or maybe lack thereof, on town-adjacent lands. Their objectives for 2025 are to provide landowners and land managers with information on invasive plant reduction in defensible space, assist the mayor and council in revising the EOP, which I'm hoping to tackle this winter, assist the fire chief updating maps of residential properties, develop a stewardship plan regarding management of adjacent public lands, working with the irrigation company regarding stewardship of the canals, and then updating our community wildfire preparedness plan and natural hazard mitigation plan. That's all I have for now.
Has anything happened with the pagers, or that, what was the name of that outfit you and Ray were looking into?
The I Am Responding app
Yeah,
that we
yeah.
implemented, yeah, it's been working really well. I mean, it's hard because we don't have a huge call volume, but we did actually have a bizarrely high call volume of Boulder EMT calls right after we implemented that, and it was really nice. So that has been working quite well.
Okay, is that something we're paying extra for, or is that just
Yeah,
part of?
$300 a year.
Oh, well, that's really minimal.
Yeah, and then they have another community emergency communication system
That's the
that,
one you were talking about
yeah,
before
you were in the
where,
meeting, right? So you
yeah.
kind of heard about that, but they basically have another app that community members can download and then put in the plan for their house. Where's your power cut off? Where's your propane? If you have a bunch of batteries, where are those at? And then that pops up in our app, our first responding app. So when we show up to your address, your plan is right there.
And medical needs and stuff like
Yeah, all
that.
that
That's
can
all part
be.
of it.
And
Okay.
community-wide emergency communications. It's a pretty slick thing. And I believe the county is still working on implementing the bigger picture of the digital version of that, that, on your iPhone, and you get in a rack and it automatically calls 911. That's all their system. And I think our county is the only county in Utah that's not integrated into that right now,
Wow.
but they're working on it. And when that happens, then we'll have like a fully integrated stack from, a 911 call all the way to your house. So it's pretty, I mean, it's a slick system, really.
Cool. Okay.
So we're making good progress there overall. That's all I have.
That's it. Okay, Gladys.
I don't have anything on the buildings or the cemetery. Travel Council, just for your information, I think Josh mentioned maybe we could raise our tax. I don't remember what it's called
Oh, the
for this year.
resort tax thing?
Yeah, but be aware the state legislature is probably going to raise their transit room tax up to 15% from, I think it's 14.35. So I'm not
Okay.
sure if we want, if something we want to think about or get input from the businesses.
Okay. All right, John.
Okay, I think the big item, I'll keep it short for this month. We've got scheduled, and we'll put another pegboard out and some no notices, what I'm calling a listening meeting that I'm intending to run on the 14th, on Lower Boulder Road. Just basically to let people express what are their goals, what are their concerns, what are their priorities, not try to solve any problems, but really just listen and make sure everyone feels that they've got a channel of communication. So that's coming up next week.
What time is that?
Let's see, your meeting's at 6, so I'm going to say I'll be here at 4:30. Yeah, but it's like I say, it's not no formal presentation, so somebody could walk in for 5 minutes, write a few things down on the sheet that's on the wall and go home. Or if they want to stay, they can.
So from 4:30 on, sort of, so that people have a
general idea. We'll call it 4:30 to 5:30 so that there's a break before the Planning Commission meeting.
Anything else?
That'll be all for tonight, this week, this month.
Okay. Right.
So all I really had was concerning the park committee. I had a conversation with Jabe Beal and just encouraged him to communicate with the other park committee members so that we have a chairperson and a secretary. That's been an ongoing challenge.
I'd say
it may require that's been an ongoing challenge. So but we did have that conversation. I think that's all I have.
Okay. I'll send an email to the park committee and ask them to please address that. All right. The county didn't have a meeting last month, and the tree committee is going to present their tree planting ceremony and all the fun things that they did.
Thanks.
I actually have a spot on the agenda.
Oh, you do? Oh.
Maybe just wait. You have your own
one right spot on the agenda for you. Just sit right there because it'll be done in a minute.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's basically. Oh, wait, there was one other thing. I wanted to talk to you about the speed bump sign over here by the school. County's kind of been dragging their feet, so I made a decision. We're going to do it. All we need is the sign. We got the posts. We'll order the sign that says speed bump and get it in. It'll be quick. So I've asked Jessica just order the speed bump sign. So that way it's out of the way.
Yep.
We don't have to wait on anybody. And then we've also, Jessica's ordering the street sign for Andy's road too.
Okay.
So those two are covered. So that was all.
Great.
All right. That is it for me. Next, public.
Wait, will you let me?
Oh, I don't know why I forget you, Jen.
It's because you want to be done.
I get
an errand.
That's probably it. Go ahead.
Okay, hopefully. Yeah.
And Lace.
Okay, so the only thing I really wanted to report was, so with my travels back to Loa and back and forth, I have asked the mayor, I'm no longer going to be coming over on Tuesdays to be in the office for an office day. Just right now in the winter time, there's just a lot of snow. So like last Tuesday, it took me like almost 2 hours to get over the mountain. And I just felt bad at the public, like we say 10, and I was definitely not here by 10. So then Lacey's going to start coming in on Mondays now for the actual like day in the office. If anyone needs to come in and talk, I am still really available to the public. I feel like even when I was doing the 2 days a week, it's not as convenient for most of the public. So most of the time I'm meeting with the public is either on a phone call, or I am here Thursday through Sunday. And that's when we tend to schedule more meetings. So still very available to the public, but that one day a week where it's actually in office will be Lacey on Mondays. I think we've still kept the 10 to 3 hours, but we'll make sure that we make that like an official post and put it online so that everyone knows, those hours. And I think that was really it.
All right. Lacey, do you have anything?
No, I just need to verify those hours of the next couple weeks with the food truck and stuff like that. But we'll get solid hours for you guys before this Monday.
Okay, thank you. Is Aaron online?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you have anything, hon?
Probably just generally, you know, a lot of this stuff is obviously coming up on the agenda that we've been working on. So that'll be covered And then, you know, I have a couple of applications that come in, but nothing yet subdivision wise. And then I think we have an RSTR hearing coming up soon. And Nancy actually asked me if I can also start just sort of collecting and reporting on any of the project permits that come in. So I'll start doing that. I'm not prepared to do that just this minute, but do that for upcoming meetings.
Okay, that'll be great. All right. Next is public comments.
Not public comments that have to do with the agenda.
Yes, that have
the space for the public.
Yeah, because we're having the public hearing for the subdivision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just scoot around.
My next.
Yeah, you're after it. I also have a mic. If anyone has a public comment, I can have it. Eric Kyler.
Okay, Eric.
I don't know if this is the right time or not, since there is a public hearing, but I have a comment about the subdivision ordinance.
That comes at the public hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Anybody else with a public comment?
Am I on?
You're on.
Okay. So obviously I'm not Dan Pence. Jean Ziegler, representing the Tree City, our Tree City Tree Committee. And I wanted to tell you about our Arbor Day, our autumnal Arbor Day celebration that was on October 8th. First of all, thanks to Josh Ellis for his attendance and help with the event, Ray Gardner and Judy, who came to several of our planning meetings. And a big thank you to Corey Johnson, who is very supportive and is always helpful and does a great job at the park. The event. More than 75 community members attended the event, planted 8 shade trees in our park, including oak, hackberry, elm, and box elder. 3 were planted around LaFaire's bench. These are watered by irrigation water, including 2 legacy oak trees that could live to be 400 years old. 2 replacement trees on the west side of the park, watered by irrigation water. 3 at the northeast corner, just west of the parking lot, watered by existing sprinklers for grass. The Boulder Elementary School kids planted 1 of the trees, and Boulder Elementary School received a tree to plant at the school. Everyone who helped plant trees in the park received at least 1 tree to take home to plant on their property. Tree Utah gave Boulder folks 50 trees to plant on their property. That's 58 trees we can add to Boulder's 10K tree initiative. After the planting, the community enjoyed Karen's pizza. Her truck was awesome. Apple cider pressing with Patrick Briggs, and help from Judy Davis as our master apple cutter. Art printing with apples, a potluck dessert, and music with Jay Beal and Josh Stansfield. The trees came from Tree Utah, which is a nonprofit organization that issues grants to communities to plant trees with their expert guidance. Besides providing the trees, all planting supplies, and help digging tree holes, Tree Utah gave a very informative planting demonstration with the help from Capitol Reef arborist Fritz Maslin and Ryan Johnson, an urban and community forester from Cedar City. Planting trees correctly helps ensure their success. Tree Utah will contact several locals who receive trees to gauge how well their trees are doing. And Tree Utah would like to do this again next year.
Wow, cool.
We want to thank you guys, the town council, for your support of the tree committee. Any questions?
No. Good job.
Thanks for your time.
That is great. Good job to the tree committee. Wow.
I think, didn't you count something like 46 people go to the bathrooms before it even started?
Actually, it was 56 people went to the bathroom. In 4 hours, I was waiting for the trees to arrive, and so I sat there about to watch them, including So that was a lot of people in a few hours in one day.
Is this tourists and stuff? Oh.
Sat there, counted, and was amazed.
Oh, wow.
This is why we have to buy the big
thing.
Toilet paper rolls.
Yeah.
Corey was having to go up at least once a day.
That's interesting, though. Thanks for the update. All right. Time change for meetings. The Planning Commission has already changed their time back to 6 o'clock. And it's been requested that the town council do the same to keep everything, the meetings all at the same time. And so people aren't getting confused and coming in late. So how do you feel about that? I'd kind of like to see it changed at 6 so we're not out of here at the hours.
You're just talking about with the time change.
Uh-huh.
The change. Yeah.
You know, long daylight savings time, the end of it. So in the spring, it would go back to 7.
Yeah, just so that we're all in sync.
Yeah, I'm fine with
that. I am too.
Yeah.
All right. We'll probably have to do a resolution for that because...
Yeah, so I'll move that we amend our annual meeting schedule to show that during the non-daylight savings times months, our meeting starts at 6.
I will second that.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right. So it's been moved that we change our time to 6 during the winter daylight savings times. All in favor say aye.
Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. Okay. So next month, 6. Send out a message, will you, Jess? All right. David Dodd sent me an email asking if we would give him a letter from the town with my signature on it supporting a bridge down at the Burr Trail Wash. And I've been through that thing. I'm sure all of us have at one time or another. And I think it's an excellent idea. But I wanted to make sure that I brought it to the council and we'll entertain a motion to do that and discuss it if anybody has any discussion on it.
I just make a comment. So I travel that road frequently, more than I like sometimes, but I'm surprised that it hasn't been done before now because any rainfall in the area will flood that crossing and make it impassable. And many times people get stuck at that crossing waiting for the water to subside. So I support that.
Okay.
And just to clarify, it's Bullfrog Wash.
Yeah.
Down at Bullfrog.
What did I say?
You said Burr Trail Wash. So then everyone's like, where are they putting a bridge around here? It's not a
bridge,
actually. It's way down at Bullfrog Wash. And
yes, that's the one.
Yeah, so I'll make a motion that we write a letter supporting the county pursuing funding and putting a bridge over Bullfrog Wash.
Okay. Well, a second?
Gladys will second it.
Okay, any other discussion? All in favor, say aye. Those opposed, say no.
Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye. Okay, next, the presentation on the subdivision, and Nancy's Pasta will give that to us.
Hi there. So we've discussed this with most of you several times, and I know that several of you were on either in person or on Zoom at the last Planning Commission meeting we had. But I wanted to give you an update on some of the changes we made in the revision we gave you. Also let you know that Caden has reviewed the code that we have submitted to you and he is good with it. It's been submitted to the attorneys that he contracts with. We have not heard back from them yet. So if there are any additional comments, we'll get them to you hopefully before you vote on the code. So the recent changes we made, we modified the ALUA, the Administrative Land Use Authority, to be the zoning administrator, recommending that you appoint the zoning administrator to be the ALUA rather than a three-person committee. And the logic behind this is if it's more than one person, then public meetings have to be scheduled. So it would take more staff time, more resources, you know, more interaction that would have to occur than simply having the zoning administrator do it. She, we wrote into the code that she has the opportunity to consult with outside firms, experts, or planning commissioners if she has questions. So, but she will be the decision maker. We think it's more efficient, more cost effective, and it actually saves staff time. We removed a requirement that you have to show electricity availability to lots, recognizing that solar is a viable alternative. So that's no longer a requirement in the preliminary subdivision application. We recognized several issues in trying to make the lot size averaging work. After our meeting a month or so ago, someone called and said, "Can you explain this to me?" And I went through it and over and over again. And then I started reading codes in other jurisdictions and realized that what we had written wasn't workable. There were several aspects to it, such as other jurisdictions have actually set minimum average lot sizes that are based on the zones that they're in. So if it's a 5 acre, is 1 acre?
You might have missed public comment.
Viable minimum lot size. How you manage and protect open space.
There's your
Nancy
cute
Joshy.
Pasta.
Hey, Andrea, mute your mic.
Is it lazy?
No, it's Andrea.
It's Andrea, I mean.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. So anyway, we found several issues with it and felt like rather than we had made the recommendation to you that we remove the lot size averaging language that is in the zoning code and put it in the subdivision code. And we had reworked it somewhat. We thought we had it right. The more we looked at it, the more awkward it was to try to implement it. So our suggestion right now is we don't put it in the subdivision code. We do keep it in the lot size average in the zoning code. And I know John has made some recommendations for some potential changes to it. And I'll talk about that in a second. So that's our recommendation. It needs more work. Even what we have in the zoning code needs more work, but our intent is to look at the zoning code in much more detail once we get through all this subdivision stuff and then do the general plan and then look at zoning. So it's something of a stopgap measure, but we think it's better to put something in here that's intelligible than something that doesn't work. We did hold further discussions on the one lot exemptions and affirmed that the majority of the Planning Commission sticks with the recommendation of one lot every 5 years. We know, and this is partly based on some analysis that Josh has done on lots that have been created over the last 25 years, that about 70% of the subdivisions in Boulder over the last 25 years have been one lot. We believe that making it possible to do this with some exemptions is reasonable. The comments we heard during the public hearing, and I suspect we may hear more comments this evening, reflect the fact that many young people have benefited from generous donors making one lot available. We haven't figured out how to put generous donors in the code, but that's a whole different conversation. But those we heard speak at the hearing that we had felt that the one lot exemption could help. I do have personal comments that I will bring up during the public hearing on the one lot exemption. So that's what we did on the subdivision code. The ALUA, the lot size averaging, remove the electrical. and reaffirmed the one lot every 5 years for the one lot exemption. Any questions on what we did in subdivision?
On the Alua, if it's two people, does it have to be a public meeting?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Wow, that's a pain.
So it's a decision. I mean, if two of them are decision makers, because, you know, you need one decision maker. And the more we talked about it, we felt like, Aaron can be the decision maker. We did discuss the option of having the planning commission be the reviewer on the preliminary application and the zoning administrator make the decision on the final application. Ultimately decided it was probably just cleaner to have it be the ZA. She can consult with anybody she wants to.
Yeah.
So,
John here. To clarify, Josh, it's when you have a quorum of a decision-making body present that it becomes a public meeting. So, if your body is two people, then two of them is a quorum. If it's, your body is three people, two of them is still a quorum. There's a loophole that the state law put in for county commissions where they can meet with their own staff, but it would not. But that's the reason for this.
But if it's one person, then
it's not a public meeting.
It's not a public meeting. Yeah.
And this all came from guidance from the Utah League of Cities and Towns that I'd forgotten about it till I was going through some of their old frequently asked questions, and they gave that advice last year and gave it again this year. So I figured we should probably follow it.
And if it turns out that it's much too much work for the zoning administrator, then the code can always be changed. I mean, we can change the Alua to be something else. I had a couple of comments. I know you have put off the hearing on the zoning code, but I wanted to tell you what we're working on because it's coming up in a public hearing in our meeting this next week. So we realized as we went through and we have revamped the building code. And as we did that, we recognized there were components about building permits in the zoning code that needed to be removed because we've now incorporated them in the building code. So there are some additional changes we need to make in the zoning code, which is essentially repealing that section on building permits. So we are having a hearing on both the building code, a public hearing on the building code and the zoning code at our meeting on the 14th. So that's, we will get through those and hopefully pass them that evening on to you so that by your December meeting, you will have all three of these codes to adopt. This has been oh my goodness, if we do this, I'm going to have to go back and change this. So, and then we're also going to not repeal the lot size averaging that we had given you and put that back in and discuss, we can discuss some of the changes that John has recommended in our hearing. We know that the zoning code needs a lot of work, but we really want to get through the process of updating the general plan, hopefully in the next few months, and then tackle the zoning code. So hopefully early next year we can do that. Any questions on zoning?
Thank you for all the work you're putting in this, you guys. Everyone of you. And John.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun.
It's been a huge project. And it's just begun.
I did want to put in one. So we have started this Voices of Boulder. Which is inviting people, anyone who wants to tell a story about what brought them to Boulder, what's kept them in Boulder, and what they see for the future of Boulder. We did this at the museum 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was probably had 35 people turn out. It was really interesting. We're doing another one next Wednesday night, the 13th. So you could do town business two different nights, the 13th and the 14th. So I invite you all to attend. We've got five storytellers lined up. We do have it on recording, and the library has put it out there. You can listen to the individuals that spoke at the last one. But they were very entertaining about their views of the vision of Boulder, and we're hoping to use some of this as we think about the general plan.
Thanks, Nance.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, before we have the public hearing, John, is there anything that you want to give out on the ordinance so that everyone who's in the audience has a general, I'm pretty sure they've all kept up with this. Hopefully, if you have comments, I'm sure you have.
All right.
Go ahead,
John. Okay, thank you. I really want to thank the Planning Commission for, they've made a huge effort on this, all three parts of our land use ordinances. So coming into compliance with state law while correcting basically 25 years of editing and inconsistencies and multiple ordinances being passed at different times without repealing the old one, it has, when it got codified, it became quite a mess. And they've really done a great job trying to resolve all that. I think, you know, tonight, I think we should, the town council really needs to focus at a very high policy level. And I think the major question is the importance to a lot of people of the, and I'll call it a one lot subdivision. I had put in writing that I wanted to consider more than one lot. I've been pretty well convinced that's not a good idea. But I think we need to discuss, as a town council, discuss, do we want the limitation to be once every year, once every 3 years, once every 5 years? I think that is an appropriate question for the town council to weigh in on. Other than that, Josh sent quite a few remarks to me, and I think he copied you on them, Nancy, and they're mostly editorial things. If not, we can get them to you after the public hearing. Do you have, Josh, you have anything on those suggestions you had about lot adjustments and that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's some, you know, lot boundary adjustment wording. I think you have a pretty good idea of that. I propose some wording. I'll get that to you, Nancy. It definitely has some very specific textual things that I want to revise. I think in the exemption section of the one lot subdivision, we need to cross-reference our code to be very clear about what exactly is exempted, because, like, for example, private road maintenance agreement is not in our definition section. So we should describe the section code that we are exempting.
You need to pull your mic closer to your turn.
Yeah, sorry. I don't hear that very often. I will pass that by you, Nancy, just because you know this much better than me. But I think this is one of those situations where we want to set Aaron up for success. And if we'd say, you know, what we mean by this is these three spots don't apply, that is very helpful. I guess overall, the one lot subdivision exemption, I listened to the Planning Commission public comments from the public hearing, which were fantastic, very high quality. Appreciate everyone that came out and commented at that meeting. One thing that has occurred to me since just in the last few hours that someone brought up a while ago that I just refigured here. So this as an exemption, mathematically is a geometric progression. So if we allow one lot to become two, then those two lots, if you have a big enough lot, those two lots, then a year later or whatever, 5 years later, become four, and those four then can become eight. So it's a 2 to the power n relationship. So and how frequently that doubles, how frequently you go to the next number is how whatever time period you set. So if it's every year, then your number of lots could double every year, right? So, and if it's more than one lot, then it's like, if it's two lots, then you're gonna have 3 raised to the power n of the number of years. So it's a geometric progression. Yeah. So that benefits large landowners exclusively, actually. So if you're smart as a large landowner, like Gladys that starts with two lots, and you're clever about how you draw your boundaries over time, you can actually get a whole lot of lots very quickly, even on a 1 or 2 year interval, because 2 becomes 4 becomes 8 becomes 16 in whatever your division period is. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing that's like, and so if you extrapolate that out to like, there's 450-ish lots available to subdivide in Boulder, theoretically under our current zoning setup. If everyone did this to all their lots cleverly, then in 9 years, all of Boulder would be divided out through this exemption, theoretically. That's not going to happen, of course. But I'm just throwing it out there as like, oh, this is, you know, it is a geometric progression. It's not necessarily linear. And it's actually an exemption, even in its simplest form of like one lot every few years. If you're a large landowner and divide the lots cleverly, you can get a lot of lots very quickly. Like in just a few years, you can actually have like 8 lots by doing this, because each new lot becomes dividable, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just something that kind of occurred to me about this that was interesting, that I've been kind of thinking about, like, oh, okay, well, if you look at it that way, and exclusively benefits large landowners, right? Because like, if you only have 10 acres, you can only do it once. Yeah, John, yeah. You really want to comment on this?
No, I think Gladys and Ray need this comment.
Yeah. First. I mean, I'm just, anyway, that's just something that's occurred to me about in thinking about the number of lots. So that however many lots you allow, that's your base number. And then whatever your frequency is, your power, it's a power function. It's an exponential, it's an exponent. So just, you know, let's just kind of consider that.
Okay.
Move forward.
Right here, Glass, you have something before I say speak?
No, go ahead.
All right. Good point, Josh. But, you know, this is what I think the important thing is, we need to create lots so people can find housing. If something like this starts being abused, we certainly have the ability in a year or two to staunch it before the geometric progression runs away on us. And I think this is kind of an observation. I've been attending Boulder planning meetings since Judy Lyman was mayor, not regularly, but off and on, that we tend to worry about the worst that could happen. And then we write very complicated ordinances to prevent what might happen, rather than focusing on what we want to have happen, which is to create some lots so people can build the houses. So, yeah, it is a valid point, Josh. I think it's one that if it gets abused, we can intervene.
How do you feel about that, Roy?
So kind of a continuation of what John was mentioning, I think it leads to trying to govern from a place of fear, quite frankly. I feel like the 1 in 5 is too restrictive. Being familiar with the dynamics of a family estate and how quickly that can change. I just don't feel like 1 in 5 can frankly keep up with those needs. You know, I would entertain maybe a 1 in 3 or a 3 in 5, something like that. But I think 1 in 5 is too restrictive.
Gladys?
Okay, first of all, I do have a couple of questions I'd like the attorney to consider. One of them is, okay, how does this affect property? Let's say, and I've looked at all the properties in Boulder, let's say there's a family who has, say they've got 20 acres. They're leaving it to 7 children. Does that mean, I'm sorry, those children can't divide that unless they meet the criteria? Let's just take a suppose, and I hope Mr. Belknap does not take offense. Let's say I have no idea what he owns. Let's say he owns 160 acres. Let's say he has 40, you know, in the generations down. He leaves that property to all those 40 heirs. Does that mean they cannot divide it unless it meets their subdivision criteria? I don't know the answer to that. Okay, and again, I looked at all the properties. Okay, so Ray, what would have happened if when you purchased more property to go with yours, the person who is selling it to you says, oh dear, now I can't ever subdivide again. Even though Ray had no potential at that time, he wasn't using it for building. Unfortunately, and this is probably, that's all we're going to use subdivided property for Boulder. We're not going to use it for agriculture. It's only going to be subdivided for people to build something on. Let's be honest. So to your comment, let's take your property, Gladys. Let's say, and I'm not even sure on this, you have 160 acres. You could potentially divide that into 30 lots anyway. The only thing is, then you have to meet the subdivision criteria, correct?
Yeah, so the idea behind the exemption as presented is that you can divide out one lot of any size that meets the minimum of your zone once every 5 years as presented from the Planning Commission. And if you do any more than that, so if you want to divide 30 lots, then the main thing is you need to get it civil engineered and install all the infrastructure before you can record the plat.
And probably if I was smart, if that's what I was going to do, that's what I'd want to do, because I'd want to become, okay, I'm going to become a developer, you know, if I'm going to do that many lots. I don't have the answer, but that was just some things to think about. I'm more thinking in terms of 3 lots every 5 years. If that becomes, you know what I mean, we're getting too many lots or that, then we can change it. I don't know.
I think you know, the town council has pretty much put out what their concerns are. Might be time to go to the public hearing and let the public weigh in on what they've just heard.
Okay. Well, that definitely is our big issue, I think, out of most of the stuff is the one lot. So, all right. I'll entertain a motion to come out of the public meeting and go into the
unanimous consent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. If there's no objection.
All right. So did we?
If there's no objection, then we've just.
Oh, darn. Yeah. Darn, how to say that. Okay. So I wrote that down so I'd remember. If there are no objections, we will go out of the public meeting into the public hearing. So moved. How did we do?
Use the mic for this? Should we use the mic? Or?
Yeah.
We should make people stand up. That sounds fun. Where's your podium? Oh, yeah. Let's make people feel real important. I love it.
Stand up with your blood pump.
Yeah.
Not ready. All right, anybody in the audience?
Yes.
Okay. Nancy?
Public. So Councilmember Baranth, John, has suggested several changes in the document that he put online, and I thought I'd respond to each of those based on having spent an awful lot of time reading the subdivision code. I have no issue with combining the sections 152.201 and 152.202, which are the boundary adjustment exemptions that you were alluding to, Josh. That language essentially was given to us by Caden, and it was reflected in state code, and we just took it verbatim. If you want to combine them, I certainly have no issue with doing that. John recommended deleting section 152.504B, which is about landscaping and irrigation water. Yes, Boulder Town doesn't regulate any water rights, but the availability of water to manage ag or open space, if we're going to do lot size averaging and we want to protect some open space or ag land, it's relevant to know that there might be water available to manage that land. So my suggestion would be to retain that section rather than deleting it. On the one lot exemption, I stand by the recommendation made by the PC for one lot every 5 years, and we'll comment on John's suggestions one by one here. So the discussion is maybe doing more lots more frequently. I oppose this for the following reasons, and wanted to start off by saying you all have much more history here in Boulder than I do. But the advantage I have, or the perspective I have, is I have lived in many communities all over the country before moving to Boulder, and I can't emphasize enough that Boulder is unique and special. I don't think there's any other place like it. And it's the combination of the environment and the community. I think Boulder's done a reasonable job of managing growth, although I'm not sure that I'd say Lower Boulder is a good example of what you want to do in terms of managing growth. But reasonably regulated and managed slow growth is what makes Boulder different than any other community in southern Utah that I'm aware of. We've got a clean environment, dark skies, quiet, not a lot of traffic, and continuing agricultural operations that provide a backdrop for the character of the community, which folks have reinforced in the general plan is of desire. There's an argument that we need more affordable housing, and this argument exists everywhere in this country. Housing costs more in Boulder because we are remote and inconvenient. That's a fact we can't change. I don't think creating more lots solves our housing problem unless those creating the lots are willing to give them away or offer them significantly below market value. Even then, young people working for the average wage in Boulder can't afford to build a house. We need to have the discussion on other options about how we house our Boulder workforce and those wanting to live here. That includes ADU regulations, tiny homes, multifamily housing, changes in zoning, perhaps. Creating more lots will mean speculation. In analyzing Boulder King Ranch estates, seemingly close to 30 of those 73 lots up there are owned by investors or out-of-towners, with a dozen of those owned by one investment company. I think cutting the land into smaller and smaller pieces will decrease the other amenities that Boulderites say they value: quiet, dark skies, agriculture, and open space. And building subdivisions with exemptions has been the bane of past subdivision development here in Boulder. Why perpetuate that with the creation of more unplanned lots? More private roads with no maintenance agreements isn't going to make it easier to have to work through our subdivision issues. So I don't understand what the rush is to try to create more lots. Why not start slow? Be restrained, allow one lot every 5 years, see what happens. If it doesn't result in the outcomes, then amend the code. Once you cut it up into small pieces, you can't undo it. So I suggest you think about your responsibility to the community, changing our code to allow more lots more often with exemptions could be a profound turning point for Boulder that it would be difficult to undo. John suggested deleting sections 152-204A, items 1 and 2, which have to do with the fact that all other conditions apply to the lots other than the exemptions noted, and that they have the one lot subdivision has to be recorded on the plat. I think it's important to keep that in the code, because if you are doing a one lot, when someone comes back and decides to divide that lot again, it's worth having it noted on the plat that it has been subject to a one-lot subdivision. So I see no reason not to keep those sections. I suggest not referencing the use of lot size averaging in the one-lot exemption, partly because as if you think you can explain how to do that to someone, how one lot exemption might be applied when you're creating a multi-lot subdivision under lot size averaging, it's complicated. So my suggestion is at this point in time, you don't add that into the subdivision code. We are having, I already said this, we're having a hearing on the zoning code and we can discuss some of the lot size averaging changes. So thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thanks, Nance. John?
John Ryan. I think everyone kind of already heard my soapbox before about affordable housing, but I just like to reiterate that with lot averaging and one lot subdivision, it is our only hope as a working class people to have any chance of making it here in Boulder. I'd also like to say small like turn of phrase that was used. No one is donating land to us. Everyone who has got a deal has paid quite a bit of money, probably more money than some people paid for their homes here. I think that Boulder has had a trend of acting out of fear that this place is going to get too big or it's going to turn into something that is not local. And because of that, it is turning into that thing that you fear. And I'm urging people to trust landowners, to trust that landowners will do the right thing because they live in this community and they care about this community. Yes, Josh, this could compound if you're a large landowner, theoretically possible. And then yes, John, we could, you know, react to that once it does happen, if it does, but I doubt it will. And I'm also urging you to trust the consumer, that the consumer is not going to buy a chunk of land that's pieced up in a million pieces with no access and no clear distinguishing factor of who's going to pay to put the road in and who's going to pay to put the water in and all of those sorts of things. I don't think multi-lots are a great idea because I think like if you do 3-in-1 or 3-in-5 or whatever it is, 5-in-whatever this to this ordinance, the problem with that is if you chunk up a piece of land, let's say somebody has a bunch of land and they chunk up a lot in the corner of their field of 5 with no infrastructure put in, the first person to build has to put in a road, they have to put in electricity, they have to put in water, it's got to go all the way out there. And then when the next person builds, do they have to do that again? Or do they pay the first person who put the road in? Do they pay? Like, how do you start figuring that out? It doesn't make sense. I don't understand how you can put in a multi-lot subdivision when there's no infrastructure in place. I just think that this is a really big issue. There are ways to build affordable homes if we can have affordable land. Coming from someone who builds homes all the time, it is possible. And if we want Boulder to stay unique, you need the working class. You need us to have an opportunity. That's all. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Anyone else?
Hi.
You want to state your name?
Oh, this is Elena Hughes. This wasn't the comment I was planning to make, but I want to address the geometric progression thing before we all comment, assuming it's like that. I do want to remind you guys that we have been talking about this for a year and we've thought about this specific thing a lot. So I hope you'll put a little bit of trust in the Planning Commission that we've analyzed this from every angle. In the 152, 204, one lot subdivision, if you look at A, number 3, it says a one lot subdivision may be applied once every 5 years on a lot or parcel. Any future subdivision of the lot or parcel shall comply with the full requirements of this chapter. Reading that now, I can see that it's a little bit unclear, perhaps, which, if that's the previous lot or parcel or the new one. But Nancy, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the intention there is that you can have like basically like a big mother parcel, and then you can divide off, and you could then 5 years later divide another one off of that mother parcel. But the new kid parcel has to go through the full requirements of the chapter if it's subdivided. So it doesn't end up being that split it in half, then split it in half, then split it in half thing. You could keep chunking off five, but you can't just keep chunking off things of the new ones. Does that feel true to you?
Original parcel. So as Gladys has said, she chunks off one piece, she has a large parcel remaining. That large parcel is then subject to, if she decides to divide it into more pieces, it's subject to the full code.
The original one.
The original one, right?
Right, but then 5 years later, it can...
It, 5 years later, she could chunk off another. I mean, every 5 years, you can create one lot with exemptions.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
okay.
That was the intent. And I should say, this isn't required in state law to allow this.
Yeah. But either way, that is an option. We could do it that way if we didn't want to have the exponential factor there. We could do it so that the new parcel can't be subdivided and the original mother parcel could keep being subdivided every 5 years or whatever we decide. So we don't have to let it be exponential. That's it for now, at least.
Who's up? I have my hand raised if nobody else is getting up.
They are. That's the one that we have.
Okay, I'll wait.
We'll get to you for sure.
Okay.
Tessa Barkin. Thank you for considering this. I think it's the first time in a long time with between this, as been said, between this and the average lot sizing, that there's a lot of hope for what can happen for people being able to get land here. I want to voice support for the exemption for single lots and not for more than single lots. It's been an object of this town for years and years to support attainable housing, and being able to split off a single lot does that. Splitting off more than a single lot does not. That is in the interest of development. Our general plan says again and again that we are trying to support attainable housing. It does not talk about wanting to support development. And I think beyond that, on like the greater stage, we're seeing human difficulty in stopping progress, right? Like in the West specifically, how much we see that. That's why the levels dropping in Lake Powell are this issue that comes up again and again and just is this huge challenge for the West. That's why St. George doesn't have water. And so when I look at this, it's like dividing off a single lot that supports our community, that supports people being able to have land who want to stay here and want to work here. Doing more than that, it just contributes to this thing that is already happening in the West of this like continuation of progress and development. We don't know how many wells this town can support. We don't. We don't know how many septic systems this town can support. And so I think as we look at development into the future, we need to move slowly. Dividing off one lot, again, is going to support us in being here. Doing more than that too quickly, to me, to us in the room, to the public, it's not worth the risk. Thank you.
Thanks, Tessa. Hey, Jennifer.
Am I allowed to come up? Hi, I'm Jennifer Gerlings. Thanks everybody for being here. Wow. Well, in my opinion, this is a great reason why you should go back to your general plan. Say, what is our general plan? What has the community already said about what they want this for this community? And yeah, they want attainable housing, and they also want to have a vision for what it is going to be. And I think the general plan states that. I was a little bit thrown by John's comment that what we want is to create lots so people can build houses. I was like, oh, that doesn't sound like something actually that I would agree with. Yes, I want young people to have houses. I want them to be able to participate. And I think the single lot subdivision, one lot, once every 5 years, that's a good place to start. Wow. If you get 50 people coming in saying, wow, I want my one lot subdivision because I want to quickly get to my next 5 years, you can reevaluate that. Say, wow, there's a lot more demand than we ever anticipated. If a lot of people, because the idea is that you've get that one lot off, you got to get that timer going so that you can get another one quickly, right? So if people were thinking, wow, I really want to subdivide this and take advantage of that, they'd be doing that right off the bat. And I don't really think that's what's going to happen here. I don't think there's that kind of demand. And yes, we want to have people have the option of doing that, but nobody says that you have to split that lot off for a young person and give it to them, not give it. Nobody gives anything, right? Is going to sell it to somebody who's here. What are the things that have been purchased recently? And so anyway, I think it shows that you've got on your planning commission thing, or at least Nancy mentioned it. You've got the general plan coming up. It seems like this is a conservative way to start. Say we'll do this, and you can reevaluate that and ask your community. How do they feel about it? How do they feel about having it be more? Does it fit in with what they see? And so, yeah, I guess the bottom line is that I think splitting one lot off every 5 years to start with the exemptions that they've outlined is a reasonable conservative way to start. It doesn't mean you have to wait 5 years to change that, does it? You guys could turn around in a year and change it. So nobody's holding you to 5 years. So if you find that you've got this incredible demand, we'll come back and revisit it. You've had the chance to hear from the public what they want. You have the landowners, big landowners. They can come and talk to the community and say, this is why we think it should be, every 3 years. But I think it's a conservative way. And I don't know this thing about fear. Like, it's also real. These things have happened. They're real. And I also fear that we won't have young people. So that's a fear that we won't. And that's something that is a real thing and is happening. So I'd like to address that fear and have it be available. So I just think it's a pretty important thing. And a lot of people feel really strongly about it. And to start slow, still giving both Gladys and Ray and anybody else, they can quickly make a one lot subdivision right off the bat. And we'll see. And if we need more, we can do more. But start slow, and that seems like a wiser way to go. So thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate all the time that you put into your jobs. I really do. I know how much it takes. Thanks.
Thanks, Jennifer. Next.
Hey, everyone. My name is Lucas Tamminen. And I want to start out by saying that I support the one lot exemption and also the given time frame. I do agree with people who have spoken that needs to be amended in the future as we learn more, or it's implemented and used and there's a need that develops from that that can always be changed. As far as the exemption, though, I think it's important to remember that one of our goals in the community is to have a school and to have housing for teachers. And speaking as one of the teachers at Boulder Elementary, both myself and the other full-time teacher have had our futures in Boulder secured through single lot subdivisions. And so I think preserving that exemption has been demonstrated to be important for the continuing vitality of the community and having people here who want to be working in those jobs and whose salaries can then support actually living here instead of trying to buy a fully developed $500,000 lot somewhere. I also want to point out that the Boulder Town Council, or sorry, the general plan says that it is an advisory guide for land use decisions, and it also requires that all land use decisions be found to be consistent with its provisions. And so there's a lot of provisions in there. But one of them is to maintain diverse community structure by creating housing opportunities for seasonal workers and low to moderate income individuals. And this kind of exemption would make single lot subdivisions much cheaper by not requiring that full power, water, roads, all these things be installed beforehand, and creates more flexibility. And I think it's important to consider that. I also wanted to address what Ray spoke to earlier. I think it's a very important point that when you have a large amount of land, but also a large family, there is a planning consideration in that about how to ensure that your family, if they so choose, can stay in Boulder and have it be affordable for them as well. And I don't know anyone's specific situation around land or children and ages, but I do think is that something to keep in mind is that with planning, you have the ability to look into the future, right? With your family, you know who people are and their ages and what they might want. And as Jennifer said, you can start now and divide one off. The subdivision ordinance is designed to make it easier to subdivide overall and make it administrative and less of an arduous process. And so starting now to do that and looking to the future is a way to work within these constraints that protect the community and keep the price of land more affordable, but still meeting the needs of your large family if you are in the situation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? The audience? All right, looks like somebody's gonna have to tell me who's up there because they're on the glass.
I'm gonna tell you first, only so that I don't forget him. So Dan is like, put his hand button up and isn't working. So just that I don't forget with him. He has a comment, but he can't get his hand up on here, so he can start with him just so I don't forget.
Okay, right now?
Yeah.
Am I on?
Yeah.
Okay, hi. Dan Pence here. Thanks, Jessica, for getting me in. My comment is about the Alua. And I know the PC has done a lot of work and went through all the permutations possibilities, but they went from the three-member body and voted to make it so that it's just the zoning administrator alone making the decisions. I'd like the town council to talk about either going back to the original PC language of having several people review the application or at least some form of the intent of the original language. I think that it's important for two reasons. One, I think the ZA is already under considerable pressure just by the nature of the position. And one or two others to also review an application could reduce this pressure. The second reason I think we need more than one person is that the ZA could be wrong in its evaluation of an application. And then there would be no checks and balances, no mechanism to challenge the ZA's decisions. I know, Nancy, you said that it's this one person sole decider is more efficient and cost effective, but are these the criteria that are most important? What about fairness? How about transparency? Nancy, I respect your experiences in other communities, but based on my experience here in Boulder, I think there's a huge danger to have only one person be the sole decider. Not all zoning administrators have been or will be as competent and decent as Aaron. I think we should have something in place to protect applicants. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Yep. Okay, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you. So I have a lot of thoughts, but the first one is, if we have more than one lot exempted at a time, do we really want to allow somebody to make 4 to 10 lots with no infrastructure or 3? I know that it's supposed to be buyer beware, but if the buyers don't beware, they're going to come to the town looking for the infrastructure, and then it's everybody's problem. I do understand why someone would want to have the ability to chunk off more than one lot every 5 years for family and whatnot, but I feel like the families can figure it out should they be in a position where they're wanting to do something like that, they can find a way to work with the rules in place. I don't think it should be more frequently than 5 years, because if you do it too frequently, it becomes less of a firewall for someone wanting, what the goal is to subdivide and sell off lots. Just because there's a one lot exemption doesn't mean it becomes affordable, doesn't mean that it's going to someone who needs under market rate. It could go for a lot more than it should. The option is there. Anyway, as far as changing it big and going backwards, that's just, I just don't see how that's possible. You can like say, oh, we messed up, let's not do it anymore, but what was done is done. You can't unsubdivide, just like Nancy said. Pretty much everything Nancy said, I agree with. Once again, I'll point out it, I've said before, you're in planning for the town, you're supposed to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. You want to make sure that you don't leave a door wide open for someone to come in and unscrupulously do things that aren't in alignment with the town's vision. It's not fear, it's apprehension, because you've seen it done in other places. So we do have a special place here. We want to try to keep it the place that we love and not accidentally turn it into something, a monster that we didn't know we were making in the meantime. So you have to be apprehensive, different than scared. You have to be careful. You have to take small steps, which is why I think the one lot every 5 years is a good in the middle place to see how it goes. And as has been said, you can change it if you find it's not adequate for the town's needs. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. Who's next up there? Eric Beiler. Eric Beiler.
Thank you. It's Eric Feiler. I wanted to second Nancy's comments. I didn't expect to hear them, but it's so true that I feel like I'm kind of at ground zero in Lower Boulder of the planning process and where things can go wrong and can go right, potentially. Where I'm at, I mean, it was with all good intentions, I think, the town had a 5 acre minimum lot size, and because that would reduce my understanding was it was to reduce taxes because you could still be in greenbelt multiple use. And it turned out not to be the case really, but it was good intentions. But now there's in the subdivision, quote unquote, that I live in, everybody has 5 acres of tumbleweeds because there was no water on the land when it was sold. I'm not saying that that needs to be a requirement. That just needs to be, there are things that people didn't think about when they presented that as the choice for the zoning at that time. I mean, 5 acres of tumbleweeds are hard to manage. Lord Boulder, the whole, I support the 1 acre sub or the one lot exemption as well. I haven't thought about it hard enough to know what the right number of lots per year is or per years is, but I really do think that we need to be innovative in getting more younger families in town to either stay here or move here or be able to stay here once they visited. I also have been involved in the subdivision process. I was on the planning commission for 6 years in the early 2000s and had experience with what is being discussed with this multiplication of lots stuff, but it was in a different context. And so it is something that we need to be aware of. And right now I'm dealing with that as well with, I guess what I just need to say is I think the town needs to be very careful when they're looking at a subdivision application that there is really good documentation on the legal access and legal rights of ways and easements and whether or not they're public or private and what that really means. Because as we've seen in Lower Boulder, there's a real problem with road use, driveway, what it means to have a driveway, what it means to have a road. Lower Boulder Road itself is a major problem and nobody's willing to take responsibility for the if anybody's been down Lower Boulder Road recently, they'll know what I'm talking about. It's in horrible shape and it's a huge expense, but who's responsible for it? Those are the things that I'm concerned about most with this new subdivision ordinance, is that there's some responsibility for the developers to take care of what's really their responsibility. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Katie? Coleman?
Hi, good evening. I want to say thank you for everybody's time and hard work. And I do have concerns about a single lot subdivision as it's currently presented. It just seems like a very slippery slope with lots of potential for unintended consequences. And I feel it really needs more work before it can get approved. It needs some TLC and it needs some intelligent restrictions and limitations and some serious thoughts about basic infrastructure. So I don't know. Just please remember that good planning is key. And no matter what you do with it, I think you want to build it into the ordinance that it needs to get reviewed in either 3 years or 5 years. Things do change all the time. And it seems like it's not ready. It needs more work. And besides of that, I'm sorry that I don't have any better solutions at this point. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Katie. Who's the last? Is that Donna?
Yeah.
Okay, Donna.
Hi. I debated on whether to speak or not. This is about the entire subdivision ordinance, right? So I can speak to other sections. This is not, the subdivision ordinance is not just about the one lot averaging, which I would probably not be in favor of it being more than, less than one every 5 years, even though it could benefit me, because I don't want to see it being taken advantage of. I think it's a great idea for a one time and could be very helpful to landowners. I do feel like people have a misunderstanding and they're getting confused. They've been confused between lot averaging and the one lot, which is really two lots. There is no such thing as a mother lot and a mother parcel. Once you divide the land of two lots, there is no, it just changes it. It's two new lots. So that needs to be understood also. I want to talk about two things with the fire. I'm really sorry I didn't get to have the fire hearing before I made a comment. So I might be saying things that are going to be discussed already. But on page 8, it talks about getting an approval letter. How does one go about getting an approval letter? And there's a place where it talks about any additional changes will be made by the fire authority prepared, not approved. There's a big difference. That's where the fire authority tells the person who wants to be in compliance what they're looking for. It's really difficult now because somebody comes along and says, can I be approved? And the fire authority says, I don't know, figure it out. And that has literally happened to me and twice from two different people. And I would like it to be the fire authority will prepare a basic plan, will come out the way it used to be and walk the land and help you decide what would be best. And maybe the pre-approval should be both, but also in your ordinance on page 8, it does say that the subdivider and their contractors and they will put together a plan. And so I guess that I'm a little confused between who's preparing the plan. I do think it might be great to have a timeline, and that might already be in the new ordinance because of the state, for the fire authority to say either yes or no, or here's my suggested changes, like maybe a 2 weeks once they get your first plan, not just, hey, you can just have to wait, which I have been told. That is not in the spirit of what the state is asking you to do. And I don't think they'll be able to say that to me after December 30th, thank God. And so that's what I hope, that some of those things will be discussed during the fire department discussion. And maybe you guys already have answers for that. And I might be being redundant earlier here. Something about the road maintenance agreement. Oh, on page 15, section 5, it says that the road, that there will identify elements of the road maintenance agreement and show examples, and then it's blank. That's kind of a, oops, somebody missed that. It needs to be fixed. And then on section 8 with potable water, there's a requirement of not just showing that you can get potable water, but you actually have to go to two things. When you're going to Boulder Farmstead, you actually have to buy the permit. I think that that is after the preliminary, but it's not very clear. There's just one line that suggests that it's after. I know that we're changing the septic permits used to be before, and now they're during the final. And what else? Something else that was coming at the final. So I'm hoping that the potable water, which is very expensive, if you're going to buy hookups for a subdivision and you have to do it before you even know whether you're being approved, it makes sense to do it after the preliminary, because after the preliminary, you will know pretty much whether you're being approved or not. You'll just have to maybe make some changes before you get the final. So I'm hoping that you will make sure that the wording says that the potable water is, because you've already said that the septic and one other thing. Sorry, my notes are scratchy. And other than that, I think the Planning Commission has really worked hard on this and really tried to, and the town is now having their opportunity to try to make this be something workable for our town and to be in compliance with the state. I do think that the ALUA could be 2 to 3 people. We just don't let them have the final say. If there's a group of 2 people, if say Erin has one person she goes to, it, as long as that person is not the final authority, she can go to that person, and that could be, that person could be dedicated so that they have the chance to get up to speed and not just her randomly going to different people. Some 2 people looking at it, ZA does get to make the final decision. That's just my thought about that. I agree with what Dan said. Sometimes getting perspective or bouncing something off someone who has the familiarity is a good thing. So thank you. I hope I didn't talk too fast. You see anyone out there, Jeff? Okay. We all good? Oh.
Hi, Elena again. I want to say something similar to what Dan said about the ALUA. And to add to it, I just think that I think it's worth considering. I would love it if you guys would have a conversation about it, about what to do with that body, because I do see that public meetings would make it more complicated, but I do think it's worth thinking about that in Boulder. We're a small town and it's hard to fill our staff positions sometimes. And it's hard to fill those positions. And then it's hard to fill those positions sometimes with qualified people, and people are doing their best and everyone's giving their time. And we appreciate that. But having it be 3 people makes it such that if someone comes into the role, they have another couple people who've been working on it. So for example, let's say Aaron's doing it. Let's say Nancy's the PC member doing it with her. And then there's an engineer, which is the original way we had it. Then if Aaron were to leave the role, someone new would come in and they would have 2 people that have already worked on X number of applications with Aaron, and they would have some background. Versus, it is hard when we get new staff in town, and it is hard the transition period of them getting trained. And there's not a lot of time to process these applications under the new state code. We have to process them pretty quickly. And I think that it might be a little more difficult and a little more expensive in the short run. But I think that if we have someone in that role who's not processing them properly, it's going to get really expensive for the town really fast if the town gets sued. Because I, as we all know, had a subdivision go through recently. And in that long process, I dealt extensively with a zoning administrator that was not as easy to deal with. And it basically ended up being, I can either wait and argue, or the option is to take legal action. And I wasn't in a position to take legal action, but had I been, I had a paper trail that would have been phenomenal for a lawyer. And I think that the town should be careful of that and just try to, given our constraints as a small town, try to just cover our bases in those ways and make sure everyone's getting proper training and has experience and feels comfortable with it when they come in and has people to work with. Thanks.
Thanks, Elena. Jess?
You didn't make a comment? Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Me, Jessica Lefevre, as a community member, not as staff, kind of. Okay, so I really just want to say that as a member of this community who doesn't own any property here, I want to tell every member of the PC and every member of the TC how much I appreciate you taking on the responsibility of making these decisions. They are extremely hard and very important decisions that do define how the town looks, how the way that it is developed for years to come. So I appreciate every single one of you putting in the time and the effort, because this is a massive thing that every one of you is undertaking. In my personal situation, it's kind of hard for me. I grew up here. I've lived here my entire life, minus a few years. And looking at the future and how to buy a piece of property is like, it's really disheartening. To say that it's not like, it's more something that will never happen than hopefully it will happen. And so I even have a situation where my own mother has property. She has the ability even to subdivide the property. I have three other siblings. What it looks like for my own mother to subdivide that property, she even leaves it to us in our will, for us to be able to subdivide it, the infrastructure would be an outrageous cost that my mother, my family, we would never be able to afford putting it in that infrastructure. The way that it's written for fire safety with fire hydrants, water, things like that. It's just extremely costly. And that's something that has been mentioned over and over again, is just how hard. And I think that when they say the word hard, there's many levels of it, but it's extremely expensive. So then we're trying to subdivide property and it's an outrageous price. And so here we are again of there's no way someone like myself would be able to afford it. So looking in that too, again, I have four, there's four of us siblings. I am the only person who lives here in town, will probably ever live here in town, and will ever probably develop the property. And so we would put in that infrastructure for four lots, and I would probably be the one and only person to ever put a house on that lot. And so then we put in $1 million infrastructure for those four lots for my one house. And I understand the plausibility of them maybe coming in and developing it, and so wanting that infrastructure. But it is hard when you're requiring it upfront, that cost, and just what a burden it puts on that type of a situation. I appreciate the saying that has been written in that it is one every 5 years. I don't think that it would be crazy if you made it a little more frequent, but I also appreciate the one lot being the one lot exemption happening a little more frequently, every 5 years, because that gives the ability to plan to subdivide those lots out. I do have a hard time with the thought process of people making decisions based out of fear. I personally feel like the town has made previous fear-based decisions, and it's kind of what's gotten the place where it is today. Being so scared of so many lots being developed and making sure that no one has the ability to come in, because we want to keep it so small. And the way that it is has made it where we are, where there's not even a way that you can think about buying a piece of property here or a home for less than $500,000. And as a person who lives here in this town, I work here, I live in this economy, I work more than one full-time job, and there's no possible way that I can live here and make these wages and afford anything that comes up on the market. And I feel like a lot of that was based out of fear and the decisions that were made. Now, on the other hand, I want to say thank you for considering that it is a big deal, and so making some of those decisions out of fear. 2 months ago, I sat in a meeting with the Tropic and Escalante mayor and the clerks, and right now, both of those towns, so just right over there. They are a little larger than us, but not by much, have very large developers that are putting in very large subdivisions, over 10 lot subdivisions. And there is nothing that either one of them can do about it. Their codes are written that they have no way to stop this kind of development. These lots are not going to be, affordable lots. They are going in to be very expensive homes. They are doing it in the right way. They're making sure they will all have their own septic systems and solar power, but every one of these is going to be going in at over 10 lots. I wouldn't necessarily be sad if there was another King's Estate created tomorrow that made it affordable, that other people in this community would have that ability to live here. But I think we're kind of past that, and you don't have the ability to do that. And so at the same time as saying that, it is very frustrating to look at it. It was insane to listen to the two towns say there's nothing we can do about this because our ordinances were not written to stop this kind of development. And so I don't sit here asking for any requests from any of you or even giving you any kind of advice. I just wanted to share both of those from my own personal experience. And again, just tell you, thank you. I'm grateful that I am staff and not making any kind of these decisions and that you guys are, because it's a lot. So thank you. And I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jess. Good information. All right. Any other public comments? Okay. If there are no objection, we will come out of the public hearing and go into the public meeting. So moved. This is challenging. So simple. All right. Well, we've heard the voices. What I'd kind of like to do, if it's okay with everybody, I don't want to go through this page by page, maybe take like 150, this month. So like we could go, if anybody has any comments or wants to make any changes on 152.
I do, but I didn't mark it up at all. So I guess I would really appreciate if we did this, maybe next month.
Yeah.
And then.
So you want to discuss it next month then?
No, I think, are you done, Josh?
Yeah.
Okay. What I'd like to do is, discuss, I've been trying to keep track here. I think we've got five or six fairly explicit things that we've discussed. One of which is the very controversial frequency thing. The others are pretty straightforward, but Josh also had a couple suggestions that we might want to put out. I think we should discuss them at a policy level. And then I know we're creating more work for Nancy, but that we would then clean up the language and then be ready to vote on specific language next month. And we should discuss the policy changes now and take motions and votes as needed.
Okay, so that's basically what I was thinking, but I didn't know. So what do you want to do?
Let's see. So what I've heard, let me see if I can summarize, and please, anyone could interrupt me if I've left something out. I think we do need to make a policy motion and take an up or down vote on frequency of how often you can use the one lot exemption. We have some textual changes, which Nancy was pretty much in agreement with, about consolidating the lot adjustment. That could almost be a consent item.
So you're on the 152.204, correct?
For the frequency, yes.
Okay.
And then I like your idea. We could go page by page and just say, okay, on that page, is there anything that somebody wants as a policy change?
Well, that's what I was going to do, okay. But start with just start at the beginning. I didn't want to have to go line item by line item. I was going to go. So start with 152 and then the next one will be 152,200. So
okay, sure.
All the way through to 100. So that's like what page wise, that is with the one we have now, the updated 3 through.
Okay, so
through 7.
Let's talk on 152,100, the Lua, since that was brought up by several commenters. You okay, Jessica? Page 7.
Page 7.
Yeah.
So does anybody have anything before that?
Okay, yeah.
I think up to that point, because that just took in fees, penalties, meets, bounds, site preparation. So, all right. So page 7.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's
the Alua 152,100.
Okay.
I think the concern that was raised by Dan and by Elena could be addressed. I think we have the intent there that the Alua, a single person can be the decision maker because this is a purely administrative decision. However, we could add something that the zoning administrator shall assemble a committee to consult with on the meeting of requirements. That was sort of our original intent. Those people would not be decision makers, but you could have, as we originally had, a planning commissioner and a planning consultant or an engineer. And we say that the Alua shall consult with those people before making a decision. That would be sort of address the concern. It would address the continuity of institutional memory, but still leave a lot of flexibility. So I would throw that out as something, as a possible motion.
So how would it be worded?
Before you, I also think the other important thing is that anytime you add something like that,
yeah,
there's cost.
Yes.
Involved. And so to make sure that when that is said, it's a great concept, but then if you're saying that every time she includes the attorney or an engineer, or someone else, you're adding
a
fee to it.
So
it's making sure that
it is.
In the fee of
it. It is. It's in 152.08B.
Yeah.
Those consulting
sure
costs are
that.
In there.
Well, yeah. One. Yeah. So it would increase the cost to the applicant, but we would make the existence of an advisory committee a mandatory thing. So a simple wording would be that the zoning administrator shall assemble a committee consisting of a planning commissioner and a land use professional to consult with in the review.
Because otherwise it has to be a noticed public meeting with minutes taken.
And worse yet, that if two of them have a phone call, it's an illegal public meeting. Yes. San Juan County has endlessly been having that stuff. And, well, these two people had a phone call about this top piece of town business.
Could you just change the word maybe to shall be consulted?
Yes, that would suffice, Nancy.
Okay. Because I have concerns about putting this all on the zoning administrator. And now that I've dug into this, even I feel just scratching the surface of this topic, it is an inappropriate ask for any random community member to know all this stuff well enough to sit in front of an attorney from an applicant and have a cogent conversation. Do you want a motion, John? Or is that what we're doing here?
I think if we can get the intent, we could leave it up to Nancy to polish the wording. Apologies to you, Nancy. I'll help, but
hey, John.
Yeah.
This is Michael Wynn, and because nobody asked, we considered this issue not too long ago, but the policy behind SB 174 is to streamline this process. And every resource and every person I've talked to about this, and every time I've debated this, this forming a committee to decide these preliminary applications is just going to fly in the face of what we're trying to really accomplish, which is to streamline this process in its entirety. So I'm of the persuasion or advisory opinion that we keep it at the one person.
Thank you, I think that's pretty persuasive in my mind. But thank you for that comment, Michael.
Yeah, except when it's not more efficient in this town, which it has not been many times for many people. Yeah. So the idea that having one person in charge of something makes it more efficient is not always true.
Well, realize we right now have the zoning administrator as the sole decider on building permits, on the project approvals. So it is not, and this is strictly an administrative question, and to get address both Elena and Dan's concerns. Under the new state law, there is a mandatory appeals procedure. After you've gone through four rounds of going back and forth with the ALUA, there is a mandatory external outside the town appeals panel that has to be assembled and has the final call. So there is definitely recourse. But the theme in the state law is that this is purely administrative. If you meet the rules, you get approved. There's no discretion anywhere in this process.
Can I make a recommendation that maybe we just get some input from Aaron? Okay.
She was fine with it when we talked about it in the planning commission.
Yep, she was. And I think as far as she goes, now we're talking about Aaron, as far as Aaron goes right now, she's a sharp cookie and puts, as we all know, puts things together. I think what people are thinking of basically down the road is if we don't have Aaron in that position and have someone else. Well, luckily we have a planning commission, Garfield Planning Commission, Caden and those guys that can help out. It'll be up to us if we are in the process of training someone new to make sure they get trained and they get people behind them to take a look at what's ever going on. And that includes the planning commission, maybe a member from the planning commission at that time. But I think we can make this work. And what Michael said was the whole idea behind this thing was to streamline stuff. And what you said, John, once they meet the qualifications and it's got to go through. So, I don't see that it, I mean, I understand what you're saying, because I could see if you got somebody in there that was someone new and they had to be trained. I get that, but we've been in that process before. And yes, we have had problems and we have learned by those problems and those subdivisions, you know, in the past. So then it's up to us as a council to make sure that we get the new person trained and that she has, and we've always got the county to be able to go back to if we have to. So,
okay. So going along with that, it doesn't have to be a local person. Maybe the point will come when, I'm sorry, there's people who out there, my job is a LUA person, hire me to review your things. And all I have to do is make sure it meets the criteria. It doesn't necessarily have to be me or you or somebody just local. County level.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's what Tropic did.
Yeah.
Tropic rewrote theirs. Their ALUA is a engineer. And so your subdivision fee is a very steep one because they wanted to make sure it was done right. And so it is an engineer who looks at it.
Yeah.
Your ALUA does not have to be.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Thanks for bringing that up.
Okay. And not that I'd be happy to leave the current language alone then.
I agree.
Okay.
We good with that one?
I think we addressed those comments. Okay.
All right. We're at 52,200. So okay. Anywhere.
So okay. There's substantial revisions to this 201 and 202 that just due to the wording of state law basically makes a lot of this wording, I think, redundant. So
I would recommend that we just come back with that language at the next meeting implemented in here.
Do you want to, I'm looking, I think I printed out the language you sent me in an email here, Josh.
So basically, I don't even know what this means, the difference between a property boundary adjustment and a boundary line agreement. But in state law, pretty much what the state law says, which is referenced up here at the top of the paragraph, if there's a property boundary adjustment that has a dwelling unit involved, and the town adopts an ordinance that says it needs to be reviewed by the municipality, then it shall be reviewed by the municipality, basically. So, and that's pretty much just that, including the specific criteria. So you, in our specific criteria would be, well, are you adjusting the property line to meet our setbacks from your dwelling? That's it. It's, you know, look at the map, look at the numbers. Yeah, you're moving your property line, but you're not putting it right down the middle of your house. Okay, so it'd be something the zoning administrator would review, sign off on. That's it.
So Josh, what you sent me was a very simplified wording. The one thing we would have to do to do this, we have to have something in our ordinance authorizing it. So the wording you gave me, Josh, was Boulder Town invokes the right per 10-9A-524-5 to require a review and approval for a boundary line agreement containing a dwelling on a lot containing a dwelling unit. The specific criteria for approval are that the building setbacks and parcel areas are conforming to the requirements of the corresponding Boulder Town zoning districts. The zoning administrator shall complete the review and communicate with the property owner according to 10-9-524-5. So very simple, very clear. I'd like to make a motion that we replace 201 and 202 with your revised wording. And again, somebody can wordsmith it before the next meeting to make sure everything fits together.
I'll second it. Are we doing motions? Or we
I think this would be a motion.
Okay, I'll second that.
All right. All in favor of replacing 152.201 and 152.202 with what John just read that Josh put in place. All in favor?
Now, what was the wording you were going to use?
Okay, so I think it needs some wordsmithing. But Nancy, if you're comfortable with this, then it would help. So we're just saying that Boulder Town is exercising its right under the state law to require a review and approval for a boundary line agreement on a lot containing a dwelling unit.
Sounds fine to me. Again, this language, we spent almost no time talking about this.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And I'll give you this in writing.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay. All in, any other discussion on that one?
Okay.
Okay. All in favor?
Riveting. Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Aye.
Judy, aye.
Okay.
All right, we'll replace that.
Okay.
Okay, anything else on 203 or 204?
So 204, I do have a few things actually before we talk about changing the number of lots or the interval. I realized in going through this that while it exempts from a subdivision improvement plan, that is not the entire section of 152. I think it's 500 where all the infrastructure requirements are laid out there at the end, the 500 series. So the subdivision improvement plan is just one element of all this stuff. Keep going down. Sorry, Jessica. Keep going down. Yeah, right in here. Okay. So I have some recommended language to be very specific and cross-referencing what the definitions are and where they're at in our ordinance. But when we say that single lot subdivisions are exempted from a subdivision improvement plan,
that is just 501. And presumably then everything else applies, right? All the other ones. So that, and the plan is basically, if, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I might be wrong. The plan is basically engineered. Here's how we're going to build the roads and put in the fire hydrants and, you know, all the water lines and the sidewalks or whatever. You know, here's our plan for how we're going to build this thing out on larger subdivisions. So we're exempting them from that. But then, you know, the access requirements still apply, right? So one of the things under here that we require that I think we should definitely exempt one lot subdivisions from is at the very bottom, underground utilities. Keep going down. Sorry. It's down after all the road maintenance stuff. Keep going down. Other utilities. I think we need to add this to the list of exemptions for single lot subdivisions. If we're concerned about affordability, right now, all subdivisions require underground utilities according to our ordinance, including one lots. So we should add that as an exemption, because if we're going for affordability, then we shouldn't require underground utilities. Like, it would have cost Andy like 25 more grand, I think, or something when I talked to him.
Oh, I'm sure.
So I want to recommend we add that to the list of exemptions. I have wording around that, you know, again, sorry, I didn't put it in this document. I didn't realize we were going to do this tonight. I apologize.
Do you want to make a motion on the underground utilities right now?
Yes, but I'll make a motion that we add underground utilities to the exemptions in 152.204C.
Okay, I'll second that.
Okay, is anyone?
Okay, all in favor?
Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Harry, aye.
Judy, aye.
Okay. Around, I think it's kind of funny. Let's talk about, number of lots and their frequency. I think I came off very odd in my discussion of geometric math series to everybody. I did that, mostly to drive the point home that, this is worth considering, but I am in no way, shape, or form like against this exemption. Basically what it means is if we allow one lot in four time periods, you could have, if you start with one lot and you have enough land in four time intervals, whatever our time interval is, you could have 16 lots. So it's 2 to the 4th.
Yeah.
So if you start with 160 acres and we did it every 5 years, in 20 years, you would have 10, 16 acre lots or whatever, or 16, 10 acre lots. Sorry. So that's like the mathematical relationship. One thing worth thinking about is the current subdivision rate in Boulder is 7 lots a year over the last 25 years. So presumably in about 63 years, if every single lot in Boulder was subdivided out, we would be fully built out and there would be no more lots available in Boulder. So we have a basically at our current rate of subdivisions that we've had for the last 25 years, if we do that for like two more time intervals, we will be fully divided out according to our current zoning plan. So, you know, one way to think about this is we could set a time interval that kind of just matches that time period. But I guess I would say, me personally, I would not like to see it more than one lot, and I would rather screw with the time frequency. So I guess because, you know, if you screw the number of lots, then it's 3 to the 4th power. So you end up with like twice as many lots basically in the same time period. So I guess I'll make a motion that we change the one lot subdivision to being able to be applied every 2 years on a lot or parcel, and we leave it at one lot.
Okay. I'll second that.
Okay.
Okay, now can we have some discussion?
Yes, guys.
Okay. I think maybe one thing, maybe I'm not, that people aren't getting is with the one lot subdivision, it still has to be 5 acres, correct?
Well,
not well, we're assuming we're not going to talk about this lot size average reading right now. Okay. And it still has to meet quite a few criteria, right? Even if it's one lot, it still has to have access. It has to have I can't remember what. Glad you picked up on that. Underground electricity. Even if it's only 1 watt, it still has to meet certain criteria. Another interesting thing is, I have been talking to large property owners. They're under the impression, I bought this property, I can do what I want with it. I can't quite get across to them. No, you can't. The town is making decisions about what you can do. So I am concerned. And I am representing the large landowners right here in this. And there's very few of them left, but I'm afraid that if we get too restrictive, we're going to create the problem we don't want to.
Okay, I'll cover a couple of things. One thing I really have to emphasize, picking up on Gladys's comment about the large landowners, anytime we do a land use ordinance, we are creating restrictions. We are taking away rights from somebody who originally had those rights. We should only do that if we're solving a real identified problem that's a municipal concern. And even if it's a municipal concern, we should try to just accomplish the problem solving in the least restrictive manner. So that's back to this legislating out of fear. And I just want to really emphasize that, yes, in this process, we are taking people's rights away. We should be careful how we do that. I want to emphasize that right now, just right today, you can create a lot without a subdivision. That's how almost all the recent lots were. Elena's lot, Tyler and Lydia's lot, Andy Rice's lot were all created basically under the equivalent of what we have here as the one lots exemption. That Josh has enumerated the need for access, water, and septic approval. But that's what we're doing right now. We passed Ordinance 2024-1 back in January. So right now, somebody can use lot averaging right now. So we're really, in this codified ordinance, not changing anything from what is allowed right today. So, and that has not caused any problems here in town that anyone's flagged. So I'm not really afraid of continuing to allow these exemptions. I guess that's my main point on this. I think, but I think Josh, you had some explicit wording about under those exemptions, citing the exact paragraph that is being exempted from. And I gave that to Nancy in writing so she could look it over. But we should, I think we should, and I guess we do have a motion here to consider that as one lot in 2 years, and I seconded that. So that, and I will speak, since I seconded it, yes, I am in favor of saying that you could apply the one lot subdivision exemption to a property once every 2 years. I think it's more than enough safeguard.
It's not what the public said.
Gladys, what was it you want? What was it you were saying?
Three every 5 years. But
I'm curious, Joshua, any particular one and two, any particular reasoning behind that?
Just kind of a compromise.
Okay.
Three and five. I mean, let me put it this way. You are large landowners, but in the last 25 years, I haven't seen any evidence that anyone's divided land off for their family in the history on the scale that we're talking about. I might not be aware of it, and it might have been recorded funny, but it wasn't recorded as a subdivision. And so I guess, you know, I think the odds of a lot of wealth moving in and doing as they please with us is both the most likely way that a large landowner is going to exit if they want to. I mean, you're learning the hard way about how much fun it is to do development work,
sure,
large scale development work. And I think Boulder's unique in that large parcels as they sit in productive agriculture are worth a lot to the right buyer. As trophy ranches. And that's a cool thing that we have going on here. So I think you know, I sympathize with the perceived reduction in rights or capabilities, but I also view it as like, where's the problem that's being solved by increasing the exemption versus which appears to not be present in that no one is dividing their land off for their kids at six lots at a time kind of thing, versus what are the risks that someone come in? And for example, if it's three lots every 5 years, someone could come in and buy 15 acres, divide it, sell all three lots and leave town immediately. And they'll be able to do that within a month. So I think that's why one lot's important. Like no one's going to bother doing that. If it's one lot a year, we can amend it. I don't think the time frame is that worrisome. I think it's important that we have a one lot subdivision exemption that is as least burdensome and flexible as possible, and that it has some time frame requirement on it, because otherwise they'll be able to do it every month, more or less. Yeah. So you could do it like 12 a year just by state mandate with the timelines. And if you knew what you're doing, so you could just come in and file application after application. And that could happen before we could even have a chance to meet again as a council. Like it's a crazy different world than we've had. Like there's no oversight now, basically. So I don't know. I'm flexible, you know, on the time for sure. Like it's not.
Okay. So what do you feel is a good one, Josh?
Well, I mean, I made a motion, so
we got to vote on that.
But what is Ray? I mean, what do you want
to amend? But I just want to, we'll finish voting on that.
It, you know, feel free to make a motion to amend it. Or.
So I guess, I don't know, a couple of thoughts, and I'm not great at expressing thoughts most of the time, but I, in my mind, if it's more than one, then those two new lot owners, they, in my mind, it's more probable that they'll get together and figure out the infrastructure. And so one doesn't, you know, put in infrastructure, and then the second person a year later is in the dilemma of, well, can I tie into the existing infrastructure, or do I have to start over like he did? So I see a potential advantage of more than one lot at a time. The second thing is, I think as a landowner, if you feel restricted to the point that that you're not sure that it's worth it, I think the response of the landowner is sell the whole thing to the highest bidder, which is going to be a developer, and go someplace where, you know, or they have more freedom with their real estate. And so those are a couple of thoughts. Because of that, I lean more to the three and five or three or a number bigger than one.
Wow, it is tough. And I was leaning on the two, and I see all the sides, and you're right, Jess, can I have your job? All right, well, let's vote on the, okay, so what was the one, John, what was your motion then?
Josh, but let me rephrase it. So we'd be changing 152.204A3 to read that a one-lot subdivision may be applied once every 2 years on a lot or parcel. And if I've got the correct version, it still has that sentence, a future lot or parcel shall comply with the full requirements of this chapter. I would change that to any subdivision of lot and parcel within 2 years shall comply with the full requirements of this chapter, or just strike that second sentence entirely, which would be much better. We have it there. So Josh, if you want to change, how would you like the motion to read? That we strike that second sentence or amend it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. I think that needs some wording. Like, it's not like it should say any future subdivision of the lot or partial shall within a 5-year period shall comply, I guess, or whatever the period is within the period. I'm fine striking that sentence entirely. It's probably redundant. If it doesn't qualify, it doesn't qualify.
Okay, then I think it would be then, so we change A3 to read a one lot subdivision may be applied once every 2 years on a lot or parcel.
I guess I'm just going back to the, I mean, if it's, okay, so if it was one lot a year, it would basically, it would be more than 3 every 5 years. I am concerned with the threshold case of some buying 15 acres of land, coming in, dividing it up, and leaving town within a month.
I am too.
That is the ultimate real estate hawk move. And if we think people aren't going to be out here trying to look for these opportunities after these go into effect, we're foolish. Like this is a gold mine for developers, large and small. So I would rather leave it one lot and increase the frequency than have it be more lots less often, because you'll always be able to do it that once. And the people who are going to do it that once aren't going to be you guys. They're not going to be you guys doing it. And if there was a way to prevent that, I would be down. But we can't prevent that from happening. And that would subject potentially a lot of speculation in this town quite easily. You know, it's going to be a 1-month process with no infrastructure required. It's not going to be going to the folks in town that should be getting the land. Most likely it'll be on the open market, right?
Yeah.
So, but I think mathematically, you know, one with a geometric progression, one lot goes to two lots go to four, and then four lots go to eight in three years.
6 years to wait.
If it's, well, it just depends. Yeah, it depends on your frequency. I'm saying if we bumped it down to a year, you'd get a lot more lots a lot faster than three every five. You would reduce the risk of anyone being, no one's going to come in here and be like, oh, I can peel off a lot every year. This is great.
Yeah.
I mean, people do, I guess, you know, you could consider, you know, maybe some folks in town have done that, but they become community members and it's slow and steady and it's, you know, they're not full on just taking advantage of the opportunity economically at all costs.
Well, let's go ahead and vote on it and get that one. I mean, null and void it rather than trying to amend it and re-amend it and make a new motion.
Okay. All right, let's do this. I'll pull my prior motion. And I make a motion that we amend 152.204A3 to read a one lot subdivision may be applied once every year on a lot or parcel, period. The rest of it deleted.
Okay, I'll second that.
You okay, sir? Aye.
Is that a?
Yeah. Oh, did you second it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you want to say something, Ray? You want to discuss? Oh, you were just going to vote.
Ready to vote.
Okay. Sorry. You had your, like you wanted to talk. So, okay. So Gladys, did you aye it?
Yeah. One.
Okay.
Yes, Gladys. Okay.
Josh, aye.
Gladys, aye.
John, aye.
Ray, aye.
Judy, aye.